Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and this interview was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For the latest news and terms and conditions, go to ukwineshow.co.uk.
Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and I'm here with James Leonard. You're a dentist, aren't you, James?
Yep, that's right, Chris.
Excellent. And we're in Marlborough region at the moment, so I suppose you get to see a lot of winemakers' teeth.
Yeah, absolutely, Chris. I've had my practice here in Benham for the last 5 years, and I've been seeing a lot of winemakers in that time with a whole lot of different experience in the industry, so it's been really great.
Have they got good teeth, bad teeth? You know, I look around the wine trade in the UK and I see teeth that looks very much like Austin Powers.
I can see it. Poor Austin Powers has given poor old men from the UK a bit of a bad name in that respect. Yeah. Chris. But no, look, I would say in general, actually, winemakers tend to have good teeth because they tend to take an interest in them and care for them.
Yep.
Reasonably switched on people as a general rule, I guess.
Yeah. And what I want to do today is just talk a wee bit about what the problems are with your teeth and wine, and also things that you can do to protect your teeth. And there's a couple of weird things that people always ask me about, like, you know, teeth staining and things like that. But let's try and understand a wee bit about wine and teeth to start off with.
Sure.
Wine's got acidity and sugar, so it's not the best combination. But what's the biggest problem with your teeth? Which is it, the sugar that's the worst, or is it the acidity, or is there tannins? What are the problems?
Sure, Chris. In terms of straight damage to the tooth, I think it's very much the acidity.
It is.
The low pH that's the problem. And what we're dealing with a specific problem for winemakers or drinkers and tasters of a lot of wine is a straight sort of a acid versus mineral attack.
Yeah. Mineral, like in the calcium?
Absolutely. I mean, the surface of the teeth that we're consumed with, what you see in everyone's mouth, is largely enamel. In fact, almost entirely enamel. And that's it's the hardest, most mineralized tissue in the body. It's about 96% mineral, with just that little remaining 4% being sort of a protein matrix that the mineral sits in. So whilst it's very hard and tough, even compared to something like the bones of the body,
yep.
It's definitely susceptible to an attack from acid.
So some wines worse than others?
Yeah, I think so, Chris. I mean, yeah, you and your audience could probably answer this question better than me. But basically, the lower the pH, you know, or the higher the acidity of anything, the more dangerous it is. And I think the other really important factor is the length and the frequency of exposure.
Just on pH, is it purely pH? Because in wines, there's a couple of different types of acidity. There's tartaric acid, there's malic acid, there's lactic acid. Is it just pH, or different acidity is a problem?
I think, Chris, that it's the overall effect of we have those different types of acid, but I think it's the sum total pH, if you like, of everything that's involved that's the really critical issue.
I suppose that for the quaffers, who just the wine barely touches the side and goes straight down, they're actually pretty good. But we've been trained to get the wine in your mouth, swish it around, think about the flavours, and then swallow. So probably tasting wine well is the worst thing.
I think you're absolutely right. I think people that they say just quaff it and knock it back aren't getting that length of exposure. And I think the other thing that that you and your audience need to be aware of is that you're having a huge exposure when you go to a large tasting, or for people who are winemakers during the winemaking process, they're exposing their teeth many, many, many times the amount of wine and the length of contact of wine when they're tasting properly than your average drinker who just sits down and has it with a meal.
So how does normal tooth decay work then if we're worried about the acidity in the wine? You know, I've always been thought sugar is a problem.
Absolutely, Chris, and you're quite right. So normal tooth decay that I'm getting fillings in between our teeth from is caused by naturally occurring bacteria in the mouth feeding on sugar that's present in our mouth from diet and converting it to acid as a product of their own metabolism. And that acid is what's actually making the holes between the teeth. The difference between the normal tooth decay and the effects we see from wine and wine making and doing a lot of wine tasting is that normal tooth decay predominantly occurs in harder to get to areas, for example, in between teeth and in the pits and fissures of teeth. And it's only in somebody with an extreme, you know, oral hygiene and decay problem that you would see normal tooth decay appearing on flat, smooth front surfaces of upper teeth. Okay, yeah. Which is, by contrast, where you tend to get the majority of your damage from the straight acid attack from wine.
So drinking dessert wine isn't really a problem compared to the acidity damage that we're going to get, because the sugar just converts to acidity later on, but we're taking loads of acidity in straight away.
Absolutely, and straight on those front teeth. And it's been interesting. This is just, you know, purely anecdotal observations from my own practice, but I generally don't find that that winemakers seem to have a problem with normal tooth decay around the rest of their mouth, you know, whether it's because they're a conscientious bunch or not, I don't know, but they certainly don't seem to have an above average problem from the sugar as such. It's just the front teeth getting hammered with the acid that seems to be the issue.
So what's happening to the teeth? The acidity is getting in there and doing what?
Absolutely. So the acidity is getting in there and basically demineralizing the surface. The acid is attacking and pulling mineral out of the surface of the tooth and just effectively slowly eroding it away. Reminds me of when I was over in your part of the world, seeing the very old castles that have been exposed to acid rain, and you go up on the battlements and you see they're all pitted. So you know, it's a very in general, a very gradual process, but over a period of time, it can remove a significant amount of the tooth surface.
Does the tooth surface continually grow, or what's a tooth? Yeah, if I'm losing a bit of a minerality, is that a problem in the long run because my teeth are constantly growing and replacing it, or do they stop growing? What's the story there?
Yeah, that's a really good question, Chris. The teeth are not growing as such, like for example something like the skin that's constantly replacing itself, yep, from the inside out, if you like, but what can happen and can be quite significant is there can be a degree of remineralization that can occur to the surface at other times, and that's certainly something you know, that's important for people who are having this acid exposure or acid erosion, if you like, from wine. So it's more that it well, I guess there's two factors. Firstly, the teeth can be rebuilt from the outside, mm-hmm, and also the quality of the surface of the teeth can be to a degree increased as well to be more acid resistant, if you like.
Okay, is that so? Okay, so you're you could put a protective layer in front, or you can just build the walls up again.
Absolutely, I mean both, Chris. I guess
is that a naturally occurring thing?
It is. I mean, there's a lot of variation between winemakers and serious wine tasters, wine judges, in how much their teeth are affected. It's been quite interesting looking at a sort of a fairly broad selection of people in the wine industry in Marlborough, New Zealand, over the past 5 years. In that I have some people who have been making, you know, Sauvignon Blanc here in Blenheim for 30 years, and in fact some of them perhaps don't have the best oral hygiene in other respects. But
do you name any names?
But having said that, you know, have very little in terms of acid erosion or acid effect on their teeth, whereas I have had people come in after their very sort of first ever vintage, you know, and season as a winemaker, already showing really obvious signs of acid effect on the teeth. And when I say obvious signs, you know, if they often come in with symptoms like sensitive or sore teeth or surfaces that feel a bit rough or perhaps are staining more than usual, and when I dry the teeth with the air, which I know is something most people hate the dentist doing, blast of compressed air on the teeth, but the surface actually looks less glossy, you know, almost a bit sort of chalky or matte. Okay, yeah. And I think the reason for those there are a couple of reasons for that variation between you know, different individuals, and just like anything else in the body, I think there's a difference in the makeup of the tooth surface. So, you know, whilst I've already said teeth are, you know, highly mineralized and very hard, some people's teeth, the surface makeup of the enamel is more resistant, okay, to the acid attack. Mm-hmm. But I think a really significant factor for people in the wine industry is the acid buffering ability of the saliva.
Oh, okay.
That's a really important thing.
So if you salivate a lot, you're gonna decrease the intensity of the acidity?
Absolutely. I mean, there's two things with saliva. One is, as you just said, is the quantity of the saliva, the salivary flow, and I think another really important thing is the actual acid buffering ability of the saliva, which does vary from person to person.
Does that raise the pH?
Absolutely. Okay. Yeah, so bring it back to a more neutral sort of situation.
Oh, okay. Okay, but I suppose some wines make you salivate a lot more. Normally it's the higher acid wines that make you salivate.
Sure. Yeah, sure. Absolutely. And, you know, we all sit at a dinner party and have something to drink that is really high acid, and you get that thing. I guess that's part of the experience. You know, it's quite enjoyable. But again, the thing is, for people in your field and your listeners, they're enjoying or tasting so many wines. They're constantly washing that saliva away and resupplying the acid in the mouth.
Do the teeth remineralize? Is that the right word?
That's right, yeah, absolutely.
How do they remineralize? Because if they're not growing from the inside out, how do you get the minerals back on there?
Sure, and two major sources, sources from the body, which is really just in the saliva, mm-hmm. calcium and phosphate ions, things going back into the surface from the body secreting in the saliva, and then there's the external stuff you put on. So fluoride, you know, dentist's best friend is a really big one. Okay,
fluoride, so that actually builds the teeth back up.
It does. In a basic sense, Chris, what happens is it can be incorporated into the surface of the enamel, and it actually makes that surface stronger, harder, more acid resistant.
So should someone be drinking water with fluoride water with their wine? So, you know, a bit of water, a bit of wine, or is that just a bit crazy?
I hadn't considered having fluoride in the water during tastings, Chris. Certainly, I think, I mean, if we look at perhaps briefly what, you know, when you guys are doing a big flight of wines or a lot of tastings, I think that, that rinsing with water is something that's quite valid. Mm-hmm. Okay, obviously, I'd imagine that I haven't been to any large-scale wine tastings myself, but I imagine there are several points during the day where there are natural pauses between, say, varieties or sessions, flights, yeah. I guess you guys call them, of tastings, and you know, rinsing with water is very valid. Another thing that I think I've been advising people that I think can be quite useful is actually chewing a sugar-free chewing gum.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and the reason for that being, I don't know if you have them in the UK, but here in New Zealand we have these ads saying stimulate saliva flow after meals and things like that, and it really does work, you know, provided you can find something that you're happy isn't going to interfere with your taste buds. Mm-hmm. Between then and the next flight, just chewing a piece of gum, stimulating that saliva flow, you know, that's going to be a useful thing during a day's tasting.
Yeah, I think most chewing gum's got flavour, and, you know, have you ever seen the movie Sideways where the guy's tasting these nice wines and he's going, "Are you chewing gum?"
Absolutely.
It's not the done thing in the wine trade.
No, no. And I can say, I mean,
what about like building up a lot of saliva in your mouth? Because I can just, you know, get a bit of saliva in there and just rinse it around my teeth. Would that help?
Sure. Absolutely, Chris. That's going to be far more benefit than doing that.
Especially if I've got some nice wines lined up beforehand, like Pavlov's dog, start salivating at the idea of getting into them.
Your learned response. Nice wine coming up, time for saliva.
All right, so some sort of saliva, or one way of getting saliva into your mouth. Is there anything you can drink that's maybe a replacement for saliva? Is there like a saline solution? Or because chewing gum really isn't going to work for me anyway, tasting wine.
Sure. No, I understand what you're saying with the, because I think, in that case, rinsing with water is good. Some people have suggested to me that they even find milk beneficial, because milk is something that has an alkali pH, you know, so that's going to be buffering the acid.
Oh, so milk's not acidic at all?
No.
Oh, so it's alkalized, and alkalized is like the opposite of acidity, so it neutralizes it.
Absolutely. I mean,
and there's calcium in milk as well.
Absolutely. So it's got to be good for you.
Yeah.
Another thing that several studies have shown to be beneficial is actually eating cheese.
Cheese and wine. Enough. Oh, that's now yeah, cheese and so, wines isn't a bad thing.
No, perhaps that's something we can work with a bit more here.
Yeah.
So, you know, cheese, again, has a higher pH, so it's going to help to neutralise the acidity and hang about in your mouth a bit longer. And that is something that people have shown to be of some use.
Okay, so milk, cheese. Maybe not chewing gum.
No, sure. unless you can find something fairly mild, it's not going to hang around and, you know, and bother your taste buds.
Okay, and water rinsing quite regularly with water. Not every wine, you could just do a flight and then have a bit of a rinse and a rest. Or
Look, absolutely. There are several other important strategies. Without overstating it, you guys really are capable of giving your teeth a good hammering with acid, yeah. like nothing else. When you have these you know, full days tastings or even several days in a row, let alone the winemaking process itself. And there are things that can be done leading up to those heavy acid sessions, if you like, to help protect the teeth. And obviously, we touched on the fluoride.
Yeah.
It's a good one, and we should all really be
that. Toothbrush or water, just normal tap water that's been fluoride?
Oh, sorry, yeah, I mean, in the toothpaste. Everyone should really be using fluoridated toothpaste anyway. Some studies have shown that there can be a benefit to using a fluoridated mouthwash leading up to, you know, intense wine tasting sessions.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously that evening and afterwards. And there are also some really good products coming onto the market over the last 5 years that contain active calcium and phosphate that are designed for really highly mineralizing the tooth surface and protecting them afterwards. And at this stage, in New Zealand, they're available through pharmacies and through dentists.
Yep.
And they come in the forms of topical paste you can apply at night, and also sticks of gum that you can chew. But they've been something fairly new on the scene that seems to be really helpful.
So sticks of gum. So on the way out of the tasting, you pop a bit of chewing gum in your mouth and you just chew that on the way home or something.
Absolutely.
Like that.
And
these special gums.
Absolutely, Chris. I mean, any gum's going to be beneficial because it'll be stimulating the saliva flow, but these gums load the mouth with mineral ions that are going to get back into that tooth surface. And another important thing that people here seem to have been really good at cottoning onto is not brushing the teeth immediately after coming from a heavy day's wine tasting. And I can imagine the temptations there. You've been moving outside eating cheese and drinking wine all day, and you've got to go out for a nice dinner in the evening.
Yeah.
Really tempting to go home and brush the teeth straight away.
Yeah, for sure.
But that's actually something that is potentially a bit dangerous.
Why is that? Is it the teeth soften up or something?
Absolutely, Chris. So you've had this acid attack. The surface of the teeth is a bit more porous, a bit technically a bit softer, if you like. And if you go and put some abrasive toothpaste on there and have a good scrub with a toothbrush, you can really speed up the stripping away of that surface.
All right, but that's quite a problem. Some people I've seen, you know, they come back from a session tasting wine and their teeth are just black. Some people drink the same wines with them and their teeth are fine. What's going on there?
Is it so that I've heard this referred to as the Dracula look? Is this after red wine?
Yeah.
Yeah. Now that's an interesting one that a lot of patients ask me about. And I think there are two things with the red wine. One is a long-term thing, the same sort of thing that you get from a lot of foods, drinking coffee, smoking cigarettes, you know, and that's the gradual long-term discoloration of the teeth.
Yep.
The smile goes a bit darker, and that's something that can be dealt with dental tooth whitening.
They just bleach it, don't you?
Absolutely.
Because it soaks into the tooth.
Yeah, absolutely. You're quite right. But what I think you're referring to is that more acute short-term...
You know,
red wine look of blackness, perhaps for a few hours or for some people.
And it's not a good look, so you want to get home and shine up the ashes straight away.
Absolutely. And what that is, that immediate Dracula look that people refer to, is actually just a build-up of coloured pigments from the wine in a layer of surface proteins and saliva just on the surface of the teeth. So for the majority of people, it will just scrub off. But as we've just said, that's not a good thing to do. Reading a report from one woman, she said she just gets it to a much worse effect than a lot of her winemaking friends. And she said she simply goes somewhere discreet, takes a serviette or a napkin and wipes off the best of it and cleans the rest off later once her teeth have had a bit of a rest. But that,
so you can rub it off?
And in the majority of cases, you can.
And the serviette won't do too much damage?
Well, nothing like giving the teeth a good scrub with a toothbrush, no.
Yeah, okay. But what's going on? It's just, why are some people more susceptible than others to it? Is it the pitting on the teeth, or
I think again, Chris, it's mainly due to a difference in the saliva.
Saliva.
Yeah, I think some people's saliva is stickier, is holding that pigment a lot, you know, holding it onto the surface of the teeth. Obviously, if the tooth surfaces are a bit rougher, they're going to to help hold it there for longer. But I think it's mainly the quality of the saliva that's having the effect.
Okay, so your saliva's a bit sticky. So you don't want to kiss anybody who's got sticky red teeth, because then swap a bit of saliva. The last
thing. Yeah, you think it might be contagious.
Yeah. Come away, you come away with red teeth afterwards yourself. That's not a good thing, is it?
Perhaps we need to do a study of some winemaking
families. Not you and me. No, we're fine. Oh, some winemaking families. Yeah, no, that would work.
That would work. Yeah, see if it's something that's passed down through the generations.
Okay, so... all you can really do if you are a Dracula, so to speak, just wipe your teeth with a serviette, don't brush them, and then just bad luck you have. How long should you wait after a wine tasting before you can brush your teeth safely?
Now, that's a good question, Chris, and the current wisdom on that is an hour.
An hour's not too bad.
No, I mean, an hour is passable. Give you time. You can just go and drive around the block in your car before you go and pick your girlfriend up or something like that. It's not too bad.
Is it like one of those things where, the very first half hour is the worst, and then the next half hour is not so bad, and then if you waited another hour, it wouldn't really make too much difference?
I think, because the longer the better, but I think you're quite right. I think as time goes by, the benefit is going to decrease, because what's happening over that hour of waiting is that surface that's been slightly softened and attacked by the acid from the drinking or tasting is slowly being remineralized by the saliva.
Okay, and you could probably speed it up by just making sure you've got, you can build up saliva in your mouth and just sort of rush it around your teeth.
Yeah, I mean, that absolutely is going to be beneficial, because you'll be turning that saliva over, getting fresh saliva in there, and getting new saliva in contact with the surface.
What about eating something afterwards? Because eating stimulates the saliva, and I suppose you could eat some of this mineralized chewing gum afterwards as well.
I think, Chris, the only other thing I'd like to mention is I talked about those, protective and mineralizing agents for the tooth surface being the gum, and there is one product that I think is proving to be really beneficial, and it's a product called Tooth Mousse.
Tooth mousse.
Yeah, it's made by a company called GC, and it's like a very thick toothpaste that's really rich in these, in these mineralizers. It's made just for teeth.
Yep.
Some people, it's used a lot for tooth sensitivity, but also for helping people who are, who are at risk of the surface demineralization and erosion of the teeth. In some extreme cases with patients of mine who are having a lot of trouble from wine tasting and wine making, I actually make them a very small, thin mouth guard, if you like.
Oh, yeah, like the ones you use when you're bleaching your teeth.
Exactly the same as the tooth whitening ones. Yeah, you're quite right. And they actually, apply this in here, seat it over the teeth, and leave it in for an hour. In some cases, maximum benefit overnight. And some of these people have been having, a great reduction in tooth damage by doing this for several days prior to, a wine conference or a wine tasting event, or during, the severe parts of their winemaking season, and obviously, those evenings too, and for a few days afterwards, and it seems to be negating a lot of the damage.
All right, so you get a tooth plate, you build up the enamel, and you build up the minerals in the teeth. They get hammered while you're doing your tastings or whatever, and then then eat some chewing gum on the way home, and then maybe put your mouth guard in and you're away.
Absolutely. Look, it's going to help. Yeah. It's going to make a big difference.
Okay. And probably, is there anything else?
Yeah, probably, because the last thing to touch on is you know, in terms of protective coatings for the teeth, you know, mm-hmm. that can be applied in a dental setting, and there's certainly a lot of work being done at the moment with various types of materials to actually bond permanent protective coatings onto the teeth. So almost like, in simple terms, you could think of it as almost like a special acid-resistant tooth varnish, if you like.
Yeah.
And I've been doing some work here with some people who do a lot of wine making, wine tasting, even, you know, international wine judging, really giving their teeth a good hammering. And the initial results with that are looking really good.
So it's a varnish. It's like a painted on.
It's actually it's like a clear resin that slightly impregnates the surface of the tooth and also provides a surface coating. And so obviously, you know, being a resin, it should be careful here, because there are other things called varnishes that we use in different situations on teeth. But I was just trying to give people the idea that it protects the teeth, you know, in the same way that a varnish provides an impervious coating on a piece of timber or something
yep.
like that.
Yep.
But you know, these are clear reasons that set in place.
And how long do they last?
I at the moment, Chris, with people who are high users or high abusers of teeth with their vigorous wine tasting schedules, I've been finding that often I'll need to apply them once a year.
Okay.
But it's a very easy and sort of inexpensive thing to do when compared to the, you know, the long-term damage and having to pay to fix and restore the teeth down the track when they...
Okay, once a year is not too bad. So just before the start of the tasting season in December, January,
Absolutely, that's usually, we give them a good polish and apply another coating.
Does that stop the remineralization of the teeth because it's getting in the way of that?
It certainly does. Okay, yeah, you're quite right. That's the downside. So we make sure that that's why, as you say, it's good to do it at the time of the year. As you mentioned, when the teeth haven't been having a hammering, mm-hmm. You know, and they've just been subjected to normal day-to-day life, and always make sure the teeth are in a well-mineralized state before we begin and then put this protective coating on.
All right then, James, that's really, really useful. Thank you very much.
No problem. Thank you, Chris.
Cheers.